the fuck is a reboot?
Well, a reboot, boys, is when Hollywood wants to make a lot of money without the hassle of creating a new movie. So they take an old movie and change just enough to make you pay for the same shit all over again.
Those greedy fucking animals.
Oh, it's insidious.
And welcome back to Reboot Debut, the most insidious podcast in podcast land. I'm your co-host, Griffin.
Your co-host, Alex. Are we talking about Insidious? What did you?
Oh, no, because the intro.
Oh.
Greedy fucking animals. I know it's Insidious.
I'm using that for like Insidious. 30 episodes of the first time you've
been. I know, it's just, it's a good word. It's on my word of the day calendar, so check that off the old checklist. I don't have a word of the day calendar. How are you doing, Alex?
Yep. Great. Working on my werewolf script.
Oh yeah, is there anything you can share or?
I have a page of bullet points that I think could turn into something.
Do you care to share, or do you want to keep that under wraps, or what do you,
Figure the likelihood of me actually making this into something is pretty low, so I'm fine sharing it.
Okay.
Also, disclaimer, there may need to be some other IP secured before this can be made, or the first part will have to be heavily rewritten.
Sure.
Okay. So. First scene. We see a battered and bloody Liam Neeson emerges from the edge of a forest and passes out.
From the gray?
Maybe. Yeah. It's, I mean, okay. my first note before that one literally says sequel to The Gray. So we all know how that ends, and it's kind of ambiguously. It's him taping broken bottles to his hands before he fights a bunch of wolves and probably dies. In this one, he didn't die. He makes it out. He's pretty grievously wounded, but he survives somehow, and he's not super sure about how that happened. Now he's back in camp, and he's drinking pretty heavily because he has even worse PTSD now. His family is dead. He almost died. He's not quite sure what's going on. He's blacking out all the goddamn time. Then, a while after he's back, people start getting killed by wolves. Like, way too close to the camp, right? Some wolf attacks. He gets enlisted to investigate these attacks closer to the camp, because that was his job before. It was, like, basically killing wolves full-time. I don't know if that's a real job or not. He slowly starts to realize that he's actually investigating himself. You know, because he's a werewolf.
Right.
Once he figures that out, he decides he's going to go back to where he got into that fight and try and locate the source of this thing. And he ends up stalking this hermit in the woods for a while until he sees him change. And there's a showdown. That's it. That's all of it. I don't know.
You know, that honestly, not a bad... As far as werewolf stuff goes, that's not a bad bad pitch, man.
I think it'd be okay. It doesn't have to be Liam Neeson for The Gray. It could be someone with the right. Same job.
Right. I mean, and Liam Neeson does survive at the end of The Gray.
Well,
what? If you watch the director's cut with the alternative ending, it shows him like laying down on like using like a bloody wolf as kind of like a pillow as like he closes his eyes.
This is news to me. I can't tell if you're being an asshole or
no. There is like an alternate ending where like after the fight you see Liam Neeson very much alive and like dead wolves.
You have to talk for a while because I have to look at this. Well.
Are you looking up the altar? Okay. So, yeah, well, that's cool, man. That's legit. That can be a legit thing. I have just been hanging out. I've been hanging out with Alicia. We've been watching Idiot Abroad and Peaky Blinders. Took some stuff to recycle the other day. Just, you know, Disney. I told you before we started recording, Disney have required some Dragon Ball stuff. So we might get... They want to, like, do a MCU movie verse, but with Dragon Ball. October's coming up, so we got Interview with a Vampire TV show, Hellraiser show, and Let the Right One In show. October is going to be it. Well, October has the potential to be spooky.
Sunday, something starts on Sunday, right? One of these shows on the second.
October 9th. I think
what definitely starts on the second. I think it's either Interview with a Vampire or Let the Right One In. I made a spreadsheet
for
these dates,
because Hellraiser is the 14th, right?
Yeah, if you just Google release date, it gives you the wrong one. I think it's like the 7th. Or the 9th.
Ouch.
It's next weekend, but it says the 4th if you just Google it, but that's wrong. Don't know why it says that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Did you find the alternate ending?
Kind of. I mean, I found an interview with the director saying that he filmed a scene where Liam Neeson fights the wolf, but that everyone roasted him, saying it kind of makes the movie suck.
And then deleted scenes. Yeah, it does, because, like, it takes away the ambiguity. Did you
read about this scene on Wikipedia?
No, I've seen the scene. I read about it on Wikipedia, and then I tracked down the footage.
I don't know, man.
So, and also, I don't use Wikipedia for everything. I just use Wikipedia for movies that I can't be bothered to, like, my time is precious. So, like, I can't be bothered to, like, you know, I could watch Where the Crawdad Sings, or I could read Wikipedia about it. I could watch all the Marvel movies, too, right? Or I could...
You could read the book.
I did that with Bird Box, and I was let down on all fronts, so...
Okay, so you read a book that had been adapted to a movie, and now you... What?
Yeah, I'm not going to read a book. Reading a book takes even longer than watching a movie, man. There are some books I am excited to read. I'm not going to watch every book. I'm not going to read every book, though, that comes out.
You don't even know how these mediums work. You can't get the verbs right for the things you
do. That's how little I care about them, Alex.
Right.
That's how little I give credit to them.
She asked you to read her drafts. No, I don't give a shit. This is not worth my time.
Actually, no. Alicia and I, we read our stuff all the time to each other. It's how we work. She's actually my editor, and she asked me to read her stuff to see, like, punch up. Like, is there any better way to word this? Am I using the proper word?
Articles that everyone will read instead of seeing this pop.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
There's him napping on a wolf. I think this is. I don't think this is an alternate ending. I think this is stuff they shot and then didn't use at all. So.
Yeah, but regardless, that's. Yeah.
Not quite the same as saying, well, he actually made it out.
And anyway, Alex, why don't you relax by playing a game of solitaire and tell our audience, our hearers, what we're going to be discussing today?
It's funny that you said relax, because that is the trigger for Derek Zoolander, the Frankie Goes to Hollywood song Relax. Which is, as we discussed, basically the movie that we watched. Twice, right? We watched Zoolander and The Manchurian Candidate. Or I did, anyway. What did you watch?
Both Manchurian Candidates?
Oh, you fucked up, man. We talked about this. We were really stoked to see Zoolander for the first time. You don't remember?
I'm sorry, did you actually watch Zoolander instead of both Manchurian Candidates? Are you fucking with me right now? I can't tell.
No, we watched. Watch Manchurian Candidate.
Okay, I was like, Alex, what are you... 2004. I was like, Alex, what are you doing to me? You had me there, you son of a bitch. That's a good one.
Garrison Ace is in that movie too. So many weird cameos.
Oh god. Lance okay, Bass, that's funny.
Fred Durst. Very weird.
All right, Alex. So yeah, what is Manchurian. Your experience with the Manchurian Candidate?
None, basically. I'm sort of like vaguely aware of the premise. I remember the Denzel one coming out in 2004. I hadn't seen either.
Fair.
That's about it.
Fair.
Yeah. What about you?
Same, actually. I knew it was about brainwashing and spies. And that is it. I never saw either. So this is first time viewing on both movies for both parties.
What order did you watch them in?
Started off with 62, then 2004.
Same. Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I figured I would. I'm like, if I haven't seen either, I want to, like, do this kind of right. Like, I don't have any expectations, so I want to see how 62 does and then what they do. And I've realized something about a lot of these remakes and reboots. They are more direct scenes and stuff. Like, more times than not, I'm finding that a lot of these remakes and reboots are just trying to cannibalize as much of the original movie as they can, unless they really want to, like, try to put their own spin on it, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not, like, inspired by makes, you know? They're pretty...
Right.
Says what
right.
It's doing on the tin. We're gonna...
Right. Okay, Peter Jones.
Is that a guy you know that says that a lot or something?
Peter Jones is one of the dragons on Dragon's Den who says that a lot.
Is that like a fantasy show that you like?
It's the British version of Shark Tank.
That thing that Tracy Jordan has?
Do you have a concussion? What happened to you? Did you? What's going on? What's going on? Why are you so
All right, Peter. Well,
oh, fucking Christ. It's, oh, God. It's going to be one of those Fridays.
You know,
They're not
so reimagining this, you know.
Right. Sometimes they are. So, where do we, like, okay. Manchurian Candidate, 1962, is more about, like, the Red Scare and communism. And 2004 is just more about, like, semi-descript sleeper agent stuff. Whereas, I mean, like, 62, I feel like, has some propaganda, right?
My favorite part about 2004 is how they managed to fit about 40 minutes of political dialogue in there without actually mentioning any specific policy positions or anything you could pin down to an actual party. It's all very vague.
Right. Americans
deserve better, and we deserve not to be afraid. And my opponent thinks America should be... It's like Jeff Winger level bullshit the entire time from both
sides. You know what? I see an old... Like, somewhere out there, there's a soldier. And somewhere that soldier has a grandmother. And in her hand, she has a bottle. She has her medication, and in her other, she's opening the door to her fridge. And she can afford dinner, or her medicine, but not both. No American should live like that.
That's why I'm cutting Social Security. We never get to that point. That's... Like no policy positions at all. You get the feeling that Meryl Streep is like maybe more conservative, but it's unclear. She might be like pro Patriot Act or something. They never really talk about it though. They don't at least in the first one, we're like, okay, this woman is working for the commies and wants to freak people out about commies, is using McCarthyism to get
some ah, ding, 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 ding. For those of you playing political bingo at home, Alex said the magic word McCarthyism. Scratch off a square. What? Alex, like, can you explain? Like
the whole bingo card. I mean, there's...
Can you explain what McCarthyism is?
It was a period of time in the 50s, I think.
50 to 54.
Yeah, it was like Red Scare shit, basically. It's we have like the Bureau or the House Un-American Activities Commission or whatever. They're basically like, everyone thought everyone was a communist, or they were labeling each other as communists and then using that to like expel them from American like polite society and politics. George Orwell actually was big on tipping people off about potential communists. He's the guy that did The Great Dictator. He got him kicked out of the country.
Charlie Chaplin.
He got Charlie Chaplin kicked out of America. He got him deported because he, you know, wrote some letters about how he's probably a communist.
And most of the time, though, in McCarthyism, the accusations were just false.
Yeah, there were. I mean, and there was an American like communist party.
Sure,
have like ties to Mother Russia or China or anything necessarily,
or Manchuria specifically.
Sure, yeah, or good. Yeah, I don't know, but it's basically just a lot of things were hot. You could just make sort of baseless accusations. They do a good job at making that, like, really putting how ridiculous that was on its face, where the senator can't even remember the number of communists he thinks are in the government at a time. Like,
he starts out with 157, then he says 123, and then he ends up at 57.
Yeah, he says it, like and that's confirmed communists. Like, or in a single, like, press gaggle, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, there's also, it like got into Hollywood a lot too. There's a lot of like black.
The Hollywood 10. And, yeah.
You know.
Now, why is America so anti-communist? Like, communism has been our big bad guy since forever. Even before the modern war on terror, quote unquote, we've still had a fear of communists infecting America, better dead than red, kill a commie for mommy, all like the propaganda slogan shit. I don't know about even forever, today, like modern the
50s.
Like, even modern day conspiracy theorists will, you know, they still have like the John Birch Society and the holdovers from that. Yeah.
They're more worried, you know, about like Jewish people. That, like, they say communists, but it's a dog whistle for Jewish people.
Right, but still, like, it's this fear of communism, like, runs through.
What people like to say is Marxist now. That's the real scary people. No one knows what that means. Well, I mean, there are, like, actual Marxists out there who know what it means, but no one making those accusations. I don't think they could... like verbalize the distinctions between communism and Marxist communism, or like Marxist China versus
why are all these things a threat to America?
My like lefty opinion.
Your pinko know. Opinion? Your yeah. Pinko commie opinion?
Well, if it's so bad and failing all the time, we should just be able to observe that and see, right? Not have to have it like demonized so much. I don't know. I think it's partly.
But look at China. Look at Russia. Look at North Korea. Communist, communist, communist.
Right. I mean, they're communists in the same way that, like, I don't know, any random
Joel Osteen is Christian
will get labeled as communist or something. Like, they're not really. I don't know. Maybe they are. I guess, like, government ownership of industry. I don't know. I think it's mainly because it... I don't when they're not like dictatorships, they're like pro social programs and pro worker, which is not pretty antithetical to like the way America runs.
Like a lot of our but like healthcare is a communist concept that we have socialist basically. Like more, well, so but, yeah. But we have some of these constructs. We have some of these communist and socialist constructs in America that aren't that like people I mean conservatives rally against them, you know, the we're always striking down welfare or we're trying to strike down Social Security.
The main like
we're trying to like,
which I think is like the big thing would just be like state ownership of industry.
Sure.
Is like the big one. America really doesn't like that. Because well like the people America like policy wise, the people America really takes care of are, you know, the like business owner class.
So right.
So I could see that being threatening to a lot of people. But.
So the Manchurian candidate deals with a 1962's Manchurian candidate deals with some proud American GIs who come back home from the Korean War. And they don't come back the same. Not in like the normal sense of not coming back the same. They came. Yeah, they think come they back
about PTSD yet, or we weren't calling right. It that. It was like probably still shell shock or something.
they come back brainwashed. They are now sleeper agents. And for all of you MK Ultra fans out there, this is going to be right up your alley, right?
MK Ultra fans. Like. It was my favorite shadow campaign the government did.
You know.
They don't remember them God, like, being forcibly dosed with LSD at any point. Maybe that happened. They didn't show it.
I mean, we don't know what happened to them. We just know that, like, they were... Well, there's that scene of them, like, sitting... So it's Frank Sinatra. Okay, so... Manchurian Candidate, 1962. Was made for $2.2 million. The box office take was, well, rounded up to $8 million.
Sweet.
So came out in 62. It's in black and white. It's Frank Sinatra, Lawrence Harvey, Angela Lansbury. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Lawrence Harvey was fucking amazing.
He was. He really was. Like, he
stole the show.
Yeah. So, I guess, like, where do we start with 62? Because it's kind of. They come back brainwashed, and it's this whole political intrigue infiltration plot from then on. And you see.
Kind of
the target of the I mean, well
the political part doesn't really happen until the last act. It's mostly like the I don't know. So like the genre for this gets described as like neo-noir. And it's a little bit, but there's not really like a big mystery. Like the audience kind of knows what's going on the whole time because you see all of the dreams and all of the like the allegorical sequences. You see both sides of them. Right, where it's
right.
God, I love the way they did that. So, like, we see them in Korea going and doing a thing and then all getting kidnapped, basically.
Yes.
Right before that, we see Shaw, who is our main, like, brainwashing victim, being a real asshole to everyone in the company, like, in the military company, right? He, like, they're all at a brothel having a great time, or a bathhouse having a great time, and he comes in there, just kind of an asshole, and breaks it up. And then they're like, they're moving, and they all get judo chopped and knocked out. And it sounds like I'm being, I don't know. I mean, they literally get like,
no, that's what happened.
And everyone goes down. And then, and then we smash cut to like Frank Sinatra talking about how much he likes Howard Shaw. Nicest guy.
Raymond
Shaw, right. Everyone's recommending him for the Medal of Honor. And then we like pretty immediately start to see these dreams, right? Like, where it's It's all these military guys kind of zonked out in chairs in the front of this like auditorium looking building. And then it's a bunch of, it's just a bunch of women in sundresses the first time. And they're like, it looks like they're
yeah, it's like a flower association. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a gardening association.
But the women in the sundresses, like the one at the front, is saying some real weird shit about how they like all the dialogue stays the same. The way they did it was great. And then we slowly start to see, like, they keep on revisiting these dream sequence scenes, and then we start to see, like, what's actually happening, and it's a room full of communist agents brainwashing, or, like, demonstrating the hold they have over these, like, recently brainwashed people. And then, what, they want to make Raymond Shaw the head of that news magazine. I wasn't totally sure why. I wasn't totally sure how that was going to help the plan. I feel like him having a Medal of Honor sort of gives him the access he needs. I don't know why him being a magazine editor is super important.
Because he has the ability to send out disinformation at that point. If he's the chief editor, he gets to spin the final story, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe regional news was more important in the 60s. It really isn't now. Basically doesn't exist. It's before their channel.
And they're taking to Manchuria, which region in northeast China. Yeah, northeast China was basically used to be referred to as Manchuria.
Yeah, the bending over backwards they did to make the title fit in the new one was weird.
Manchurian Global.
Yeah.
So the Raymond Shaw and Major Bennett Marco, who's old Blue Eyes, Frankie boy.
I actually like Frankie in this movie. It's because we don't see a lot of him, and he doesn't really get to spend that much time hitting on women. They could do a little bit about halfway through, but he's kind of preoccupied.
Yeah, it's good. He's good. I don't mind it.
Still very sweaty, but it kind of makes sense in this.
They start having all of these returned GIs start having dreams and like active memories about what really happened. And as Alex described, it was no longer a room full of women discussing flowers. It was these communists showcasing what they could make these soldiers do. So they had Raymond Shaw kill two of the unit.
Yeah, they did a way better job in the older one at establishing the people that died were actually liked by the unit. They kill this one guy who is pretty young. They point out in the room like one of these communists before the bald guy with the funny with the like wispy mustache is talking about this kid who's like in their unit, and he's like, I don't remember his name. It was like Johnny or something.
I think it was like Billy. It was like,
it's Billy last name or whatever. And he's like, wow, Billy looks pretty young. He must've lied about his age to get in here. And then Shaw's like, he's like, yeah, maybe, I don't know. That part was kind of a bummer. Right. And then like, they did a good job at making Shaw be like very formal but very polite the entire time. The communist guy even points out like he asked politely to borrow Frank Sinatra's gun to kill this kid with as he's being told to do it.
Right.
It's very, yeah, it's an intense scene, but it's like super, I don't know, like ethereal kind of feeling when it's happening.
Weird. Right.
It's like a dream sequence. And then he suffocates that other dude with a plastic bag, which is also very intense. And then they tell the other guy to just like, no, stop resisting, please. He goes, okay.
Yep. And their goal is to create the ultimate sleeper agent. Like, that is the Soviet plan, to infiltrate America with a beloved sleeping agent who has no guilt nor memory of whatever crime they are sent.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, a sleeper agent is usually a spy who are inactive, quote unquote, until they are turned on like a light switch. They are activated to perform a duty. And then once that duty is done, they return to their normal behavior, normal memory, things like that.
And you don't have to be like a full on like brainwashed robot to be a sleeper agent. You could just be like the Americans going about your day to day spy business until you get called up for something, and then you go back
The idea is to be a not passive, like you're passive there. Observer, and then an informal active agent. It could be theft, it could be murder, it could be espionage. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So sleeper agent. Like you and the for the modern Bucky, right? Like Winter Soldier, Captain America shit. Bucky is a sleeper agent.
Actually, what they did to Bucky is very similar to this, where like he is an American soldier, but they have a series of code words they can use to program him.
Sure.
In this one, we find out that the programming code for Shaw in this is like, why don't you play a game of solitaire, right? And then like,
That's what starts it. It's a blank slate.
Give him a card,
and then
they give him a deck of cards with the cards like stacked in a specific way so that he sees Red Queen,
the Queen of Diamonds,
right?
Yes, I think it's the red. Well, it's just the Queen of Diamonds.
Okay, they say. Okay, I thought in the movie they said Red Queen, but maybe it's Queen of Diamonds every time. It's when he has that deck that's nothing but queens.
Yeah.
I think it's both, but... Yeah.
The idea is to turn Shaw, whose stepfather is a senator, and has a lot of pull, obviously, and his stepfather may or may not become
such a fucking heel. I love him. He's so stupid and great. Just a
and Shaw is designed now to he's poised to be the great operative, right? Like he's an American war hero.
Yeah,
he has this job at a newspaper. But he is a sleeper agent. He has no memory when he is activated. He just gets a phone call. Hey, oh, Robert Shaw, why don't you calm down with a game of solitaire? Then he starts going through the motions, and then they tell him what to do next.
I'm remembering the movie more. They didn't need him to become a magazine editor. He just happens to do that because they have him kill the... He has this very sort of a weird relationship with his mother, played by Angela Lansbury, who is also great in this. Where he kind of like, it's very like love hate. Like, he definitely hates her, but there's also some really intense attachment going on. Where you're like,
it's the relationship that Archer has with his mother.
Yeah,
that's
a good way to describe it. It's very simple. Like, they despise each other, but like, the mother is super manipulative, and Raymond like kind of can't escape that orbit, even if he wants to. But he gets a job at this magazine, like, pretty close after he comes home, and like he tells his mother specifically he took that job because he got talking with the editor and they both realized they hate his mother about the same amount. I think
it's
something is like pretty close to an actual line he says, and he takes that role doing some non-specific job for this magazine, but he really hates his mom, and she is kind of like she's like a political stage mom kind of thing. She really wants him to be doing other stuff. She's like the woman behind the curtain for the Senator Shaw. She's like feeding him all these talking points. There's several times where she basically tells him like, shut the fuck up, it's not your job to think. Like, I'll tell you what to
do. Like, here's what I want to happen. She is a mastermind of
She's feeding him
all pretty much about everyone's life. Yeah.
She's feeding him the lines and the like weird numbers, like the deliberately inconsistent numbers about how his whole thing, this senator's whole like thing, scuttlebutt. The only thing he talks about is that he has confirmed proof that there's a bunch of card carrying communists in the Department of Defense, I think. And he knows there's exactly 143, exactly 109, exactly 152 card-carrying members of the Communist Party.
And then when he's asked about it moments later, he can't answer, makes up another number, and then quickly leaves the room.
Yeah, he says three different numbers in the span of like a minute in the same press gaggle. And then tries to talk to Angela Lansbury. He's just like, wait, how many? Can we just pick on a number? Because I feel pretty ridiculous.
Right. Pick on a number that I can remember.
Yeah, which is great. And then she...
And they land on old Heinz 57.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now there's 57 card-carrying confirmed. Which, what the fuck does that mean?
It means they...
Like, card-carrying... I mean, I know that, like. But like...
They have a card that says they're a member of the Communist Party. Like, I just got my voter registration that says Democrat on it, right? Like,
right.
I assume it's something like that. But I don't... I doubt anyone in the 50s would be carrying a card that said that.
Like, precisely.
What's going on.
Precisely. That's, I mean, that's what I'm getting
like,
at.
Also... I mean, a lot of this stuff, too, was, like, very, very thinly veiled anti-Semitism. A lot of the you're a communist, as it is now, was, like, really, you're a Jewish person. But it's, like, Adolf really ruined that for all of us, so it's not super cool to say now.
Adolf. Yeah. Yes. So, Shaw gets activated a total of 3 times in this movie, which...
4 times. He gets activated accidentally that one time and walks off the pier.
Right. Well, no, that's one of the times.
So he gets activated to kill his magazine boss. He gets activated to...
Yes.
...kill that senator and his ex-girlfriend, which was very sad.
I know.
He gets activated to walk off the pier. Oh, I guess he gets faked out activated at the end. Yeah.
Right. No. Like, for a movie, like, there wasn't... I liked The Manchurian Candidate 1962, but it didn't do much... It didn't do much politicizing. It didn't do much sleeper agiting. It was kind of, like, middling in all of these things, but... That being said, all of that middling together made it really enjoyable. Like, it was really good.
Yeah, I actually thought that the bits around, like, the parts about the sort of, like, political plot conspiracy things were, like, the least interesting to me. I had a much better time just sort of, like, watching things happening in the moment. And then also the actor that plays Raymond is like a tour de force in this. He is doing this thing that sometimes I find aggravating, but I did not.
Well, that's Lawrence Harvey.
Lawrence Harvey, yeah. So he really is like,
he's
really chewing the scenery when he's in a scene, right? He's like, he's all over the goddamn place, but in a way that works really well. He's like, he's got like, he's got like that mid-Atlantic accent. For one, and then he's also kind of like, he's all over the place. He's like really like extreme highs and lows, like emotionally when he's acting. So like that scene where him and Frank Sinatra are getting drunk and he's talking about how his mother has ruined his life was like very intense and good.
Right.
And I felt really bad for Shaw the entire time. Like sort of like, I like the way they frame this where it's like Frank Sinatra kind of knows what's going on about halfway through the movie. And he just, like, has a lot of, like, sympathy for Shaw, so he kind of lets him do a few things. Like, Frank Sinatra tells Shaw what's going on, you know, like, hour and a half into the movie or something, maybe an hour in. And then Shaw, like, believes him, but he's like, I gotta go talk to my gal first. Let me do that, and then I'll go turn myself in with you. Frank Sinatra.
The marrying is awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
like the unintentional marrying.
Oh, you know what? Shaw gets activated at that Halloween party too, but then his gal comes in wearing that Queen of Diamonds costume and deactivates him, which was
great. Well, she doesn't deactivate. See what I think happened. What I think spoiler alert: the mother's in on the
she's his handler,
American handler.
Yeah, well, they keep on, they talk about how he has to be, like, test-driven first to make sure he's, like, ready, and he'll get passed off to his American handler. And we find out,
so,
end of the second act, that it's her.
And then halfway through, like, yeah, halfway through this, like, the mother goes to activate Raymond, so she says the trigger activation, which wipes him clean. Then they go through, she finds the Red Queen, but they get interrupted. So she takes the deck of cards, and in from outside walks this girl he's trying to marry, he feels affection towards, and she is just happened to be wearing a Queen of Diamonds outfit. And it cuts there, and then the next scene, it's Raymond, and her name is Jocelyn. Jocelyn coming into Frank Sinatra being like, we went to Maryland last night and got married. What I think happened is, because he was still in that activated trance, I think that conversation was something like, why are we waiting? Let's just get married right now. And then Shaw was like, yeah, I think it's a great idea, because
he's also like super manic the entire time. I think he'd be into it regardless. And I think the way it works,
right,
you see the first queen that like gets him in the receptive state, and then you kind of give the orders and like drop another one. And then that kind of is like, okay, now go. I think is the way they explain it. They say there's like one to unlock things and like another one to like set them, or I don't know. But you can see, like, at least for me, like, it seemed like, he's all zonked out. She comes in, he turns, and then she says his name, and then he has, like, you can see him, like, kind of shake it off and come to. And then, because he does a really good job, he does a much better job at this than the new shot. You can really, they do, like, movie cues and stuff in the newer one, but, like, you can really
tell. Leave Schreiber?
Yeah. But, I mean, you can really tell in this one when he is, like, catatonic, like mind control zombie, and when he's Shaw, because he is like super manic as Shaw, and he is like super catatonic when he's being mind controlled. It's like just the fact that he is super emotional with her, which he is, right? He like gets up and they run and they're hugging,
sure,
and kissing and super into it. That makes me think that he is not like in his weird murder robot state at that point.
Okay, I can swing that. I didn't know what I was expecting. I knew it was gonna be like political and kind of like cloak and daggery. The Manchurian Candidate never really went in one direction or the other. It was kind of middling on the... like, we never saw him got activated too much.
Yeah. It's not really that much of a mystery either, right? We kind of like...
Right.
We kind of know
it's all above board really quickly.
Yeah, like, the stuff that gets revealed is, like... yeah, it's not really, like, twisty, like M. Night Shyamalan twist style stuff. You're just kind of like, what? Like... or at least for me, I was like, there were several points where I was like, whoa, awesome. Like, it was cool to watch the events unfold. And there were several points where, like, when Raymond, you know, gets activated by his mother and then kills that senator and his daughter that he had sure. this, like, childhood romance with, is the same, what you said her name was, I forgot now.
Jocelyn,
right. This is like a childhood romance that he had that his mother had broken up. He like is crying to Frank Sinatra while they're getting super hammered, talking about how like his mom found out about it and like caused them and like forcibly separated them basically. And like, I think like it's implied like made up a bunch of like heinous shit about her or something.
Right.
And then like as Raymond is like getting more distant from the mother brings in this senator who is also the main senator that like her husband is demonizing. He is like the one, he's basically like Bernie Sanders in this, and he is being identified by Shaw, like Raymond's stepdad, as like the main, like he's that guy's
communist. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's also the one who is like raising the alarm bells. I like that they use actual forceful like language in this. They still don't really like talk about specific policies other than Senator Shaw. I don't know. He's really fired up about the communists. But the other guy was like, basically, he's like, you guys are holding like fascist rallies every other weekend. This is pretty alarming. Right. We need to investigate this. So he's like an right. actual threat to what they're trying to do. Yeah, so like the scene where Raymond gets activated, and they They have a little throwaway line earlier about like, oh, part of the program is he's going to kill any witnesses too or whatever, right? So he gets sent over to that house to murder Bernie Sanders. And then Jocelyn sees Raymond killing her dad, and then he like kills her too.
Just to be clear, his name is Thomas Jordan.
Thomas Jordan, sorry. I don't know.
He's, just to be clear.
Know, he's not an analog for Bernie Sanders. I don't think Bernie Sanders was in politics at the time, but it's like you get that kind of a vibe from him, right? He's like a
yes. He is a liberal in a world of yes.
Oh, you know, the people know who Bernie Sanders is.
Yeah, Mr. Mittens.
But like that scene was like devastating when that happens. Like that's part of why, like, I don't know. They did a really good job for me, at least like building up sympathy for Raymond the whole time in a way that I did not feel for Liv Schreiber.
I feel bad. Like, yeah, Raymond needs an honest break. Like
he's having such a rough go. He's an out of touch asshole. But that's like his main.
That's fine. Let him be
I know. Yeah, he basically is like he's like too wealthy for his own good and is kind of contemptuous of most people. But he's not a murderer.
But not even that. Like outside, he's trying to be a good person, but his status is blocking him.
Yeah, and then like when he's like after him and Frank Sinatra are like buddying up, which is like Frank Sinatra is like gets put, he becomes his friend basically because Frank Sinatra is like on to this whole, he's the one like uncovering the conspiracy the entire time, and he goes to like the military intelligence unit and he talks about these dreams they've had, and a few other people, at least one other person in his unit, have talked to him and reported the same stuff. And in this one, military intelligence just like instantly believes him. They're like, "Yeah, sure." And they find some like supporting documents or something too. I don't quite remember. But the main thing is that like everyone has like nothing but nice shit to say about Raymond Shaw when they get back. And then Frank Sinatra has a conversation.
Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, warmest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life.
Yeah, and Frank Sinatra has that line where he's like, he's remembering, he's like, I say that and I believe it, but I know it's not true. He was like the biggest asshole in our whole unit. Everyone hated that guy.
Shaw's a cold, sad, unsympathetic loner.
Yeah. So like the military intelligence kind of buys it right away. They're like, okay, Frank, we're putting you on the case or whatever. And then he has kind of, I like that they sort of backgrounded most of Frank Sinatra's stuff. He's kind of just there as like a vessel for us to watch this weird shit happening to Shaw. But like him, them being buddies is like really humanizes Shaw. And you get a lot of his sort of like his weird mommy stuff going on.
Which they did in 2004, but they took it to a place that was unnecessary and somehow made it worse.
I don't, they wimped out too because they do the same thing. There's an uncomfortable kiss on the mouth instigated by Shaw's mom in both movies, but it's like Meryl Streep's like a little peck, and then they're going in and they cut away, and then in the Angela Lansbury really goes for it.
I mean, let's be honest, you're Angela Lansbury and you're squaring up to Lawrence Harvey, and this might be the only movie you do together. Like, wouldn't you go for it?
You know, Mac on him. That you're
like, wouldn't you go for it? Like, I get it.
Like, yeah.
Like you go, Angela Lansbury. You lay that down. Yeah. Like, so at some point, Frank Sinatra realizes what Shaw's activation is.
Oh yeah, the cards.
And the cards. Because he keeps asking what's Raymond doing with his hands?
Bar. Oh yeah, too. They see him like flipping, he's like pantomiming flipping over cards like passively or something.
Right.
This is after, because he had seen him get activated in that bar. Well, he meets him in the, like, Shaw gets activated accidentally in this bar. Someone just happens to say, "Why don't you play some solitaire?
Relax with a game of solitaire." Yeah.
And then he like asks the barman for cards and starts flipping him over, and Frank Sinatra like happens by him in that bar and sees him all tranced out, and then follows them to this pier that Raymond just walks off of.
Well, the guy says, why don't you go jump in the lake?
Oh, is that what he, and then he... And then
like, the bartender that. Is talking, and as Raymond is going through the motion of solitaire, he finds the Queen of Diamonds, and at that exact moment, the bartender just says, why don't you go jump in the lake in Central Park? But that's to his own conversation he's having with people. No, so Shaw overhears that as part of the command, and then he, like...
Hops in a cab.
You know, yeah, robots his way to Central Park.
Walks off the end of that pier. And that's sort of what Frank Sinatra was like, whoa, I think we got something going on here. And he talks to Shaw, and they're both worried about it, which is nice. And they're kind of like buddies from there. And they're working this thing. But after Shaw comes back from being married, right, he says he wants to spend... Oh, it's the Jocelyn is talking to Frank Sinatra. And he's basically like, okay, you guys can have... 2 days, but that like for your honeymoon, but then I have to take this guy in.
Right.
But she's like, thank you. And then that's that's enough time for Shaw to get like snagged by his mom again, and then he murders his wife and her dad. And then he kind of disappears for a bit. And Frank Sinatra eventually gets a call from him, and he's in a hotel room outside of Madison Square Garden, which is where a big political convention is happening. And this is like our last act. Who is the guy they want to have him assassinate? Is it just like some random?
It's his stepfather's opposition.
Yeah, just so it's just some other senator, basically.
Yeah,
they're gonna do a.
It's a presidential nomination.
Yeah, and so they want him to. Okay, they're at the like the nomination convention. Or something.
Right.
And they're going to do an actual false flag. They want to kill this guy intentionally and then have Shaw sort of like step into the limelight and give a speech like literally immediately after this man is assassinated, talking about how we need to sort of like clamp down on things. And he's the man to do it. And Angela Lansbury.
Iceland, not Shaw, Iceland. Senator Iceland is going to step forward.
Right, but Senator Shaw... Okay, Senator Shaw is metaphorically going to step forward after that as, like, the guy to, like, take care of things after Iceland is assassinated, right?
No. Iceland is the guy who's going to step forward after the nomination... After the nominee gets shot. Iceland is the stepfather who Shaw's mother mother is controlling.
Sorry, I'm mixing
his
up
name is Senator Iceland.
I'm mixing up the two movies. Yeah.
That's Senator Iceland is the bumbling.
The guy who can't keep the numbers straight. Senator. Right. Yeah. So they're gonna assassinate someone, and then Iceland is gonna Shaw's stepfather. it's gonna take I really like how they play up that too. Like Iceland is always like like really leaning into being the dad of the Medal of Honor winner, and then Shaw is like very vociferously like stepfather, damn it.
But when they get back, like when the opening of the movie or whatever, they get back and Shaw's there with his Medal of Honor, and his fucking mother and his stepfather show up with that banner that says Johnny's Boy on it.
Yeah, she has like staged this whole press gaggle just to be there to like take advantage of this moment. She's great. Oh, I despised her. She was awesome.
She's great. I despised her. She was awesome.
So fucking, right. And then, like, so Sinatra and Shaw, they end up, they're together again before this convention thing happens, right? And then that's when Frank Sinatra does his, like, he's figured out the code. He makes this deck of cards that is nothing but Red Queens. And then he sort of, like, trances Shaw and then does like he says it later too. He's like he basically just tries to do like his own version of this magic where he's like, take out all these queens I got. Now I'm in charge, right? And like you're free, man. This shit's not gonna work on you anymore. And there's a little more to it than that, but that's basically it.
Right. He's like, anyone tells you to offers you a game of solitaire, you tell them it's busted up.
Yeah. I love Frank Sinatra, man's man, trying to do psychotherapy. Yeah, and then so Shaw kind of like he goes off the grid for a minute. He pops back up in a hotel room outside of Madison Square Garden, calls Frank Sinatra. He's like pretty broken up, and he's telling him that like he thinks something bad is gonna happen. Basically, he's like a little vague about it, right? And then he goes and sets up in a sniper's nest in this convention center. Yeah, and then things, I don't know, Frank Sinatra's there. There's a bit of like a rush towards the end of the third act. Frank Sinatra's there trying to find him because he's pretty sure that his cool magic trick did not work. He even says, like, I'm stupid when I think my magic is stronger than your magic. This doesn't make any sense. Gotta stop this guy. And he's like, Shaw's like up in this nest in this theater. He's like in the light box room or something. It's like a decommissioned mummer's room or something, or lightsman. I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe the grip works up there or something. And he's got his gun trained on guy who isn't Islin, the guy he's supposed to shoot. Chris Nas is rushing up there. And then, like, right when we think he's about to, right when he, it looks like he's about to shoot the guy that we don't want to die, he moves the rifle quickly and he shoots Islin and his mom. And in a pretty dramatic way, very cool. And then Sinatra breaks in there. And then Shaw is kind of like, you know, someone had to stop him. Like, couldn't have let this keep on going. And then he offs himself very quickly. And then it cuts to black.
Yep.
And the movie's over.
Yep.
That last scene is intense. It happened so fast. I was like not ready for that. Really, really surprised me. In a good way, but it's still
like he shit. Puts his Medal of Honor on too.
Oh yeah. Like he's in full like military dress at the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the Manchurian Candidate came from a novel. And in the novel, they play up the incest thing hard.
Oh,
right. Because in the novel, Eleanor uses her son's brainwashing effect to have sex with him.
Eee. Okay.
Left that out. It's Eleanor Island's father sexually abused her as a child.
Hurt people.
And the filmmakers thought at the time that incest was too taboo to portray in 1962 on film.
Yeah, incest is weird. We'll just have them open mouth kiss each other on the lips.
So yeah, the kiss is about as far as it went to hint at it. Now, I told you, Alex, this was made for $2.2 million, right? Mm-hmm. Half of the budget was Sinatra's salary.
He's barely in this. He's also...
Half of the budget was Sinatra's salary, and then $200,000 went to Lawrence Harvey.
He's, like, okay in this, but Lawrence Harvey, at least in this movie, is, like, a way better actor. And based on the two Frank Sinatra movies I've seen, Frank Sinatra is, like, not that good at this job. Like, he's okay. That scene where he has to fucking, like, karate fight that Chinese guy.
Oh, God. Oh, man. The kick and, like, the... Yeah.
It is, like, yeah, it's old school, like, James Bond level, like, judo chop kind of stuff.
Right. Like, Batman fighting?
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching, I was like, it's cool. I guess it's a little choreographed at points. When they're throwing each other around, it looks pretty good. But when they actually have to kick or punch, it looks terrible.
There's also like a whole subplot of Eugenie or Rosie.
Oh, God, yeah.
With Frank Sinatra.
You can kind of just ignore that. They could have cut that whole thing. They make it like kind of more important in the newer one, but that also feels really
tacked
on and weird.
Sure. Totally. And that brings us to the newer one. 2004's The Manchurian Candidate, starring Denzel Washington.
Lee Schreiber. And Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep is pretty good in this.
And Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this Manchurian Candidate, the budget was $80 million.
Yeah, it makes sense.
A lot of
just a lot of like weird like VFX stuff happening.
Sure. The box office take was 96.1.
Okay. Well, made money.
Wah, 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 wah.
I think as long as it doesn't lose money, everyone's cracking champagne.
The plot is basically the same, although we're no longer in the Korean War. Now we're in the Gulf War, baby! Yeah, 1991!
They're in Kuwait when everything goes wrong. It's kind of the same plot, but a little...
Oh, and John Voight, too!
Oh, yeah, John Voight is Bernie Sanders in this, right?
Yeah, yes, Thomas Jordan.
Yeah. but barely, because he's not even like, and he doesn't, he's like, he really doesn't like Meryl Streep, who is a senator in this. They've removed Island completely. He's gone. Raymond Shaw now also a senator, and he's getting the vice presidential nomination.
Right.
This is like, they did two things. Like, in the first one, the term candidate didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, the Manchurian Candidate, this guy isn't running for anything. He's not a candidate for anything, like Shaw or whatever. And this one, they went the other way. The Manchurian part does not make sense. It's super ham-fisted. It's like some weird...
No, it's like, Manchurian Global. They're a private equity firm.
I understand what they did. Yeah, no, I get that. I'm just saying it feels forced and weird. But the candidate
makes
sense. Because he's like actually a political candidate. He's getting a vice presidential nomination. And then the sort of thing we're working up to is assassinating the guy who is the presidential nominee. I actually went, and once they revealed their grand conspiracy, I was like, wait, does this even make sense legally? I don't know that the vice president becomes the presidential nominee before, like, he hadn't actually been elected yet, right? He was nominated.
Right.
But you don't have to, like, doesn't necessarily follow that assassinating the presidential nominee would, like, necessarily make the VP the new presidential nominee.
Right.
I think they might just pick a new one. And even if he was assassinated in between, like, Election Day and then, I can't remember the name of the process, but the thing they were trying to do on January 6th, like, if the president-elect dies in that time, it's also not totally clear that the vice president would just become elevated anyway. It definitely would happen after, like, everything had been counted in the on Jan 6 or whatever, but apparently it's, like, legally up in the air. I don't think it's happened before. That's an interesting question, but we don't really get into that.
Right. Also, I don't... Ted Levine is also in this one.
Ted Levine. That name was really familiar. I don't...
Ted Levine was the sergeant in Monk, but more importantly, he was Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, he's the bald, angry guy who gets punched in the face, right? Or no, that was a cop.
What? No, Ted Levine is one of the military majors who's basically being like, Denzel, I like you, but I can only go so far to help you because you're pretty nuts.
Yeah, oh, right. He's the more like sympathetic one. Then there's a different bald military guy who's like really antagonistic, the skinnier dude.
Right.
He is Buffalo Bill. Interesting.
Yeah, he puts lotion on the skin.
So this one is the same, but the sort of point of reference for the audience is we're following Denzel Washington basically the entire time. And we have very little like view of Shaw except for one or two scenes where he gets activated. I did like the way they did like the film language around his activation was pretty cool, where he's on the phone and then like his face tilts up a bit and all the lights change. Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. And you're telling me that like the first time he gets activated and he walks like, go to your hallway, turn right. And like they have an entire room set up next to him.
I thought that was
an entire medical facility.
Back, was he hallucinating right now? I'm like, nope, this is definitely all real and happening. That was weird. Because they had like a similar style scene.
Everything
in the original movie. Well, not quite. They have a similar premise for a scene in the original movie where they basically fake him getting hit by a car and they put him in full traction in a hospital room so that they can like inspect him and make sure everything's cool. And this one, yeah, God, they have like that drywall ripped out of the back of the closet.
So some of the major, like, there is no Senator Island. It is straight up just Meryl Streep as Senator Shaw, Eleanor Prentice Shaw, and she has turned Congressman Raymond Prentice into his true form, which is a Prentice.
Raymond,
which Prentice is a Prentice. Shaw. Ah, it's so good.
Raymond
Prentice
Shaw, but that's her maiden name, right?
Right, but like, there's that one point where he's like, "I've turned into a Prentice, like apprentice, like an apprentice, like an apprentice to his mother." Like, ah, wordplay.
Could you say it more, please?
Love it, love it. The character of Eugenie or Rosie is different, and they tried to make it seem more necessary, but really the character doesn't need to exist.
She could have been completely left out of the original movie and also
sure
this movie too. I can't really remember. She's like, actually, her being a spy makes more sense than her just being like a random woman who was into, well, I don't know, Denzel. I guess a random woman could be into a crazy Denzel. But the dude is like clearly unstable when they meet. He's like blacking out. He's doing weird shit in her bathroom. He's like zoning out, having little PTSD freakouts and stuff. And she is like, she's known this guy for like 10 minutes before she invites him into her home. And he's been
right
kind of a fucking weirdo the entire time. So I guess her actually being like a CIA dark agent or whatever who wanted to spy on him too is like the, that actually does make that make a lot more sense. This is the time I'm like,
right,
you're fucking stupid. How are you not dead yet? This is, you met this weirdo on the train and brought him home with you immediately.
And Denzel carves an implant out of his back.
Yeah. Right. And she just like, she comes into him like bleeding over her sink, holding a knife and then like dropping stuff.
Which that's normal.
Sure. Yeah. That's good. You know, first date activity.
It's normal.
I mean, the character was basically like ancillary in the first one anyway. You can kind of like, we basically didn't mention her, and I don't think you lose any of the plot.
Yeah.
I think people just want to see Frank Sinatra have a love interest or something, but she's like barely even that. They kind of like, they meet up on that train. Kind of it, really? I don't know. Yeah, and then this one, they meet
it up, is like, the golden age of like leading man, leading lady romance type shit.
Yeah, and because Raymond kills his leading lady, we gotta have someone in there that isn't Andrew Lansbury.
Right. But in this one, Liev Schreiber, okay, first off, whatever happened to Liev Schreiber? What, like, he used to be kind of everywhere for a while.
I was like, oh, I love this guy. And then he's just like,
yeah. But where is he? Where's he been?
Manchuria. Or
Manchuria, yeah.
Kuwait.
I haven't seen him in a while. Like,
yeah, me neither.
So, yeah, the Meryl Streep is great in this. She is awesome. I love her as a villain, which yeah, she doesn't really get to do very often, but when she does, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Denzel
is pretty good. I just didn't like his, well, I don't know. I just like, because of how close I watched these movies together, it's like impossible to watch the newer one without thinking of the older one most of the time for me, which I guess is like sort of the point of what we're talking about a lot of the time. But it kind of felt, I don't know, immediately as the movie started, I was like, I like this less than the original one, I think, the entire time. And it's like, it's not a bad movie. I think it was pretty well received. It's got like an 8.5 on fucking IMDb or something. So like, not.
Well, I mean, it made 96 against an $80 million budget. It came out along the same time as Harold and Kumar, Thunderbirds, and The Village.
Ah, The Village. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing the trailers for this because it was 2004, right? I think it was in film studies when this movie came out.
It was nominated for a lot, but it only won the 2005 Hollywood Film Awards Costume Designer of the Year.
For those awesome military getup? Okay.
That's all it won. And we're talking about Best Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress, Best Actress in a Role, Supporting Actress, Best Action Adventure Thriller Film, Best Supporting Actor, all of those nominations. And it only won the Hollywood Film Awards Best Costume Designer of the Year.
Yeah, this has all like the trappings of like a late 90s, early 2000s political thriller, but it doesn't really like,
it does.
It's not like a good one, I guess, or not like blow me out of the water. I don't know. But like everyone's, like I was saying, my favorite part, well, it started as aggravating and then I enjoyed it more and more as it went on, was the non-specific political talk that reveals, like, A, this movie is not going to criticize either of the actual political parties that exist, and then B, they're also not going to invoke like any sort of real policy positions that could be identified as belonging to one of those political parties. They don't even say the Patriot Act at this movie.
Like, I mean, why would they take that risk? Well, like, no, it's
I know they don't want to do, I just, it's funny and it's impossible not to notice how,
sure,
how vague things are, right?
It's like, hello, politic person. I am also politic person. Yeah, we shall sit down and discuss politics. And
you know, the people who are making this movie still want to be able to go and like go to political fundraisers and stuff, I guess.
Right.
You know? It's a different time. There's some vague notions about like maybe Meryl Streep's party, whichever party that is like the more sort of like militarily reactionary party, maybe, but like,
I mean, John
Voight didn't really get him to nail anyone down on anything.
Well, he's from New York and she's a senator for New York, so it doesn't. And if John Voight is also from New York and John Voight is supposed to be like the more liberal without, like, she's, I think she's supposed to be conservative because
I think she is like basically like pro Patriot Act kind of thing. Maybe it's unclear, honestly.
She, yeah, I can't tell. Like,
I get the sense that she is like more so, like, because like her and Raymond both talk about how
people, she, well, no, she this. Has to be conservative because she demonizes the Clintons.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she makes an offhanded comment. She goes, the Clinton watchdog, stop that. Oh no, watched. Oh, maybe she does. Oh man. Okay. Yeah.
See,
they
so
really
vague,
did leave
right?
it as like, vague can, as possible.
You can mention the Clintons or whatever, but you can't mention Bush because he is in office at the time.
Correct.
Or is like, might have been running for re-election as this movie came out. I think that's what was going on.
The Manchurian Candidate came out June 30th or July 30th.
They would have been running in 2004. Yeah. Okay. So a few months before.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I don't know. Shaw is a lot less likable in this to me, to like my viewing anyway. They did that thing that kind of so in RoboCop, you know how they have like, there's in the newer RoboCop, right, we have this cop and then he gets turned into RoboCop and everyone's like, he's not the same, he's like just an emotionless now, but like before that he like didn't emote the entire movie.
Oh, right.
That kind of felt like that with this Raymond, where like the old one was like so emotive and like really like big acting. And this one, he's just like kind of flat affect the entire time. He actually seems more pleasant when he's being mind controlled, or like more emotive.
It's because he smiles when he's being mind controlled.
Yeah, and he just scowls the rest of the movie. But he's also supposed to be like the hope and change politician, is the vibe I get from him anyway.
Right. Like an American for America, because like, that's like his mother is pinning that whole
possible.
Non-specific better. It's true. It is. Yeah, they kept it as like non-threatening to any political party as they possibly could have.
I've been watching Veep again, which I love that show. They managed to do the same thing. They never like specify a political party for anyone, but they do it in a very funny way. Also, it's like the point of the show is that like no one, well, a point of the show is that like no one really gives a shit about the policies they're passing outside of the interest groups that they serve. So they also don't name political parties in that, but it's like funny and kind of part of the point. And this one, they might have loved Raymond Shaw in that show though, because he just kind of like shuts up and does what he's told, which is all these people
right. want
their politicians to do. It's great. Yeah, I don't know.
So Denzel is like losing his mind, and he's having memories, and he pulls a implant out of his back, and he takes it to his buddy who used to work on like. He was hired to make implants for the CIA for a little bit, and then he quit, and it finds out that he actually is, like, brainwashed or whatever, and then he's, like, this girl, Eugenie, or Rosie, he's with, is, like, a fed secretly, and, like, as Denzel is realizing that his memories are not his or whatever, or there's been, like, false memories planted, he shows up to leave Schreiber. And he tries to, like, there are, like, two or three conversations, but it ends with Denzel biting Liev Schreiber on the back and, like, ripping out Liev Schreiber's implant out as, like, proof. But he doesn't show Liev Schreiber there and then at the table. Like, he doesn't spit it on the table and be like, look, he just saves it for, like, a more opportune moment, I guess.
He saves it to show to his buddy, right? Because he lost his implant down the drain, which also, like, easy to retrieve that. There's a pee trap down there. You just unscrew the fucking, I don't know, whatever.
That
part, I was like, this is a very solvable problem, guys. We can, like, just get a wrench. But no, I have to go into this political office and then bite Liev Schreiber on the back. That's the easier way to get another one of these things.
Yeah, he really sinks his teeth, like, grr! He, like, really sinks his teeth in.
Yeah, this one is more of, like, we're following Denzel around as he kind of, like, unravels this mystery, kind of. But not really, because they do the same thing, where, like, most of the information that Denzel uncovers is basically just, like, oh, this Manchurian Global place is kind of shady. Yeah? Yeah. And then, he will have, like, dream realizations of what was actually happening, right? There's not like he doesn't uncover some piece of information that unlocks things for himself. He just this is Manchurian Global, pretty shady. Now I remember Liev Schreiber killing people. Does he find like a
report? And he did too.
What happened? Oh, did he?
Yeah, like Liev Schreiber. So they have Denzel kill that guy with a gun first. They have Liev Schreiber handed to him, and then they have Liev Schreiber suffocate that one guy. Like, the two missing men in their unit, Denzel kills one and Liev Schreiber kills the other.
Yeah, they do a little bit of, like, fake-out kind of stuff in this one, where if you've seen the original movie, you'd be like, oh, I know what's going to happen, and then something slightly different will happen. Part where Eugenia, I fucking hate that name, is like she tells Denzel her phone number, but she says Klondike first, which is like that's an old switchbox phrase. I don't know that in 2004 saying dial Klondike would have actually gotten you anywhere. She's like, I like to say old way.
Did he say Klondike? I thought it was.
No, she says the same thing.
El Dorado.
That's what it was.
Sorry. It's El Dorado. Klondike is the
fake one for like The Simpsons and stuff. But Seinfeld, they use Klondike a lot. But yeah, the El Dorado thing. I was like, that doesn't. Would that even get you anywhere in 2004? What is that?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Thing, right? Like, I know it existed into the 90s in New York. Maybe it was still around in New York or something, which is also where this one's happening. Because I know there's episodes of Seinfeld where they're still using them. Oh. Yeah. I think there was just one of the, like, here's a little nod. Back to the movie.
Like Baldwin, it was. I know Baldwin. I know Baldwin and Market, and those are the only two that I really know. But I don't know any others. But yeah, it was, they were like, yeah, it was just switchboard things to make it easier. It was exchange names.
Yeah. Right.
So she says Eldorado, like, and then she goes, I like to
something. I don't know.
I like to say it the old fashioned way. And it's like, no one uses that in 2004. Like,
yeah, let me just pop that into my razor. Okay.
Like in 1962, she's like Eldorado, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, everyone gets that. But in 2004, even I, like, I'm watching it with Alicia, and like, they say that, and I'm like, the old fashioned way. I'm like, oh, why? In my head, it took me a minute to register. I'm like, oh, she's, why? Like, the very strange. I didn't understand. Like, the military are also super unhelpful in this one. Like, they do not believe Denzel. They just keep telling him it's Gulf War syndrome.
Yeah.
They're like, you're fucking losing it. And, like, so it finally gets to, like, a head where he's gonna assassinate and, like, but it turns out that Denzel is the assassin now.
Yeah, it turns out that, like, I guess everyone in the unit could have been turned on like that.
Right.
Which is, that does also kind of answer a question I had in the original one, is like, why is the whole unit here? I guess to give him, like, credibility when he gets back.
Sure.
But it seems like a lot of loose ends.
Right. And in this one, all of the unit have been dead, like, cancer, drowning, suicide, blah, 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 dead, except for Schreiber and Bennett and or Marco. Yeah, Marco Bennett. And the activation is just their first name, like title name, like Sergeant Blank, and then Sergeant Blank Blank, like,
and then three part
full, and then like first name, last name, and then name. Full name.
Yeah.
And that's their activation. Yeah. That, like, worse activation. I preferred the one in 62. It's more fictionally pleasing to have, like, the agency of, you know, a code word, and then going through the routine of, like, playing solitaire and then finding your activation trigger, and that, as opposed to just the name thing. I don't know. I think the 62 had a better activation.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So then Denzel gets activated because he's trying to talk to Leave, and he's like, we can do this, I got you, like, we can expose it all, I have Manchurian Global, and I know all about him. And then Leave Schreiber's phone starts ringing, and he's like, don't you get it, I'm the enemy, they've counted you in. And then it's his mother, it's Leave Schreiber's mother, Senator Eleanor, and she's like, yeah, now you're gonna kill the candidate. And
meeting in that middle school for some reason.
Yeah, the vote. Yeah, it's a voting office.
Oh, okay.
But it's a middle school. It takes place at a middle school
during school hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a bell rings after this scene. A bunch of little kids start running all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Denzel is just out in the wind now, right? Eugenia has lost him. I also don't understand why no one could be in the room for them to talk. That seems kind of weird.
I know. Like, let the fucking FBI agent who's working with you in.
Who you've told everything to at this point, right? Like,
right.
And who has also bugged you, so she probably has a pretty decent idea of what's going on. There's, as far as I can tell, like, no reason she shouldn't be in the room, at least standing in a corner and watching or something. You know, but, like,
totally.
You're meeting with someone you know is, like, a can be activated to become a murder machine at any time. It just seems like OPSEC.
No, it absolutely does.
Which is why Denzel is able to totally get the jump on her in that one scene and almost kills her.
Like, she moves, like, she goes in the room, and Denzel's gone.
Yeah.
And then now we're at the convention night and it's all happening and there's like fireworks and like, woo. And Liev Schreiber is with his mother who totally wants a piece of that sun meat. And he misses his cue intentionally. And Denzel's like looking for a shot, looking for a shot. And then Liev Schreiber
star on the floor and Eleanor has told Denzel that, like, or she told Liev Schreiber that, I don't know. We know that the thing that's supposed to happen is that he steps on the star and then Denzel takes the shot. And Liev Schreiber
at
knows
the
that too.
At the nominee so that Liev Schreiber can take his place and become president.
Right, which, again, is not totally clear that's how things would actually go. But
so, Liev Schreiber intentionally misses his mark because Liev Schreiber and Denzel have been working in coalition now.
Maybe.
And
like, Denzel seems like oddly sweaty the whole time, and he's definitely doing some stuff that's only for the audience if that's really what's going on, like keeping the original target in his crosshairs the entire time and then putting his finger on the trigger and getting ready to fire. But then having Liev Schreiber not hit that star and then looking very confused and removing his finger. I think that Liev Schreiber is able to communicate his plan to Denzel. I don't think they talked ahead of time. I think he communicates his plan through that series of like of wry smiles and winks at him.
Sure. And then, you know, like he finally lines up and he shoots and the bullet travels and it hits Liev Schreiber and his mother, killing them both.
Yeah, they're,
and,
they're
slow
dancing way too close when they...
Yeah, and then Manchurian Global's secrets are outed in public.
Oh, God, there's that scene of all of them, like, weepily drinking fucking... They're, like, they're drinking brandy and shit, right? But they're all sad about it.
Yeah.
In that smoky room. It looks like a cigar club.
And then it cuts to like the FBI editing the image of Denzel walking through the checkpoint at the beginning of the convention
into some random white guy who was like also affiliated,
so that they can pin the assassination on someone else while they still work. Right.
Yeah.
And then it ends back like in Kuwait somewhere, like in that region,
on a random beach or something. Like,
I guess, but they were still supposed to be in that area.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know, man.
Because they were only missing for 3 days.
Yeah, I'm not... I wasn't really sure about the end of that. They're just, like, on some weird little, like, sandbar with, like, part of a dilapidated building on it. Like, old
Which is where they were conditioned.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Found
it? Weird.
Yeah, but the building had been destroyed and dismantled.
There's also a scene where Denzel sees that like empty sort of like testing lab room, right?
That was his friend. That was his buddy with the monkeys and the shock therapy.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay.
Yeah, because they were following him because they knew that he'd been activated.
Right, okay.
Or Manchurian Global figured out that Denzel had figured out about them, so then they were following him. And then they cleared his buddy out off screen. And then Denzel like puts a picture of his unit in the water with the Medal of Honor that Liev Schreiber gave him earlier. And credits.
Yeah. I was underwhelmed by this.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, all in all, man, like from having no experience with this movie, what did you think? Like seeing both of them experiencing this? I mean, the Manchurian Candidate, 1962, it usually ends up on a list of like classic movies or like movies to see before you die. And
I love that.
You know,
I thought it was amazing. It's one of my favorite movies we watched for this thing.
really?
Yeah, I don't know.
What was it about? Like, was it just Lawrence Harvey? Like,
I'm not sure exactly. Lawrence Harvey was a big part of it, though. I had like so much sympathy for that guy. He's such a genuinely unlikable, but he's such a sympathetic character. And this guy is like, been absolutely ruined by circumstances totally outside of his control. This is like that acting, having Frank Sinatra not be just like a contemptible piece of shit in something was nice. He's still not amazing, but I was like, I was ready to be really skeeved out by him. So, you know, expectations subverted in that sense. And also just like the events of the film are really compelling. Like I was not ready for the sort of like surreal nature of all of those dream sequences that they have. Like, cause they're not really, they're recalling real life events in dreams, but the way they did that where, yeah, they have like the dubbed in lines to like the sort of changing group of people that is like standing in for the communists every time they revisit that dream was like really cool. And just like the events of the movie were really compelling. The ending I thought was amazing. I genuinely didn't know what was going to happen. They had like, there was like really good tension between us like watching Shaw line up his shot and then Sinatra like rushing up there to stop him. And then like Sinatra being like pretty sure that he actually fucked up. And it's like, I thought we maybe the power of friendship was stronger than it was. Uh-oh, guys, we got to stop this. yeah, I don't know. I loved it. And then the second one was a stole all the wind out of my sails, I guess. But the second one could have been great. Maybe if I watched that one first, I would have had better feelings about it, but it just didn't really do anything for me. It's like, it should have been good on paper, I guess. I don't know. Like, the cast is all a bunch of powerhouses, but I just didn't find the movie super compelling.
Yeah, man, it's I don't know, I enjoyed it. Like, the original Manchurian Candidate, I knew the general premise, and I was like, okay, we're gonna get into like some activation, there's gonna be like some sleeper agent shit. Yeah, and it didn't lean into that heavy.
I thought there was going to be more spy shit, especially after I saw like the neo-noir tag for genre. I was like, oh, and it does have a lot of that. Like, there's a shitload of Dutch angle in this movie.
But yes, there is.
But there's not really like, there's not really a lot of like gumshoe work, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's, I don't know, man. It's just, it's a solid film. It's, the characters are cool. Like, Alicia even liked it. And she gets nervous now when she watches movies from the 60s or, like, any earlier, because she, you know, she's worried about the portrayal of certain peoples or, like, the behavior of certain leading actors, right?
Like, I'm seeing black and white movie from the 60s with Frank Sinatra, and immediately my head does that CJ, shit thing.
Yeah. Right, like, but no, like, this makes me think, like, okay, maybe Frank Sinatra, maybe there are certain Frank Sinatra movies to be worth checking out, like.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I still am not convinced that he's a very good actor. Maybe.
No.
We have to check out some of the world. He was in some World War II stuff, too, right? Like, is he in? Yeah. Oh, he's in that fucking, what's that movie where all the guys break out of prison? Is he in that?
The Great Escape.
The Great Escape.
Yeah. You know the opening scene, or not the opening scene, but the scene of the Manchurian Candidate where Shaw's arguing with his parents on that plane.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like the
second. That is Frank Sinatra's plane.
Oh, really?
That is Frank Sinatra's personal plane.
As part of his salary went into him getting paid for them using that plane too.
Like half of the fuck, a million. That's dude, that movie.
That's a Donald Trump move right there. He's like, oh yeah, I have a plane. You can rent it for me for this thing that I am also being paid to do.
Right. I don't know if he like rented it out or if he's. I'm sure he got money from that.
We have to pay for it.
Yeah, right. It's yeah, and like definitely maybe worth checking out some Sinatra movies, maybe. But 2004 Manchurian Candidate didn't hit as hard. The ending wasn't as compelling. It was a very mediocre film.
Yeah, they kind of like, I don't know. They like took it in different directions, but it didn't really like. It's like the most non-political political thriller I've ever watched. Right? It's like it's just a political thriller because these people happen to be politicians. They could have been doing literally any other job, and had a lot of the same script lines and stuff, and it wouldn't have been too much different. Like if we change it to, he's assassinating the head of like some financial
a pharmaceutical company.
I don't know, because it was pretty inconsequential. Other than like
they could have all been equity fund members or some shit. Like
And also like the idea that a crony for some shadowy financial organization is going to be in charge of politics is like as being something like crazy and new. Like, you know, maybe this is commie talk coming out, but like that's not that crazy. And also they're heavily their interests are heavily overrepresented in government anyway. Like
right,
they need assassins. They just pay people. It's way easier.
Right. It's called lobbying and super PACs. And
exactly.
You know,
I don't
like,
remember when Citizens United was, but that would have made this entire plot line irrelevant.
And like, I think the Manchurian Candidate 2004, it wants to keep playing the idea of sleeper agents. Like, there is a cool space for sleeper agents, right? Like, we've been obsessed with the idea of brainwashing, like the Men Who Stare at Goats, the CIA doing all their weird, like, experimentation in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the dolphin thing, like, LSD, all of the weird, like, mind control, the American propaganda of, like, Soviets brainwashing American troops and all that shit, MK Ultra, and all of those fucking like tinfoil tinfoil hat conspiracies. We love the idea of a sleeper agent, even like, you know, Bucky, Winter Soldier, that whole thing. That movie Salt with Liev Schreiber and Angelina Jolie, the Americans, and then like the actual Russian spies that were like, we love that shit as a storyline in America. And the Manchurian Candidate, just, you know.
I would buy this more if it was like a Nicaraguan dude being brainwashed by the American CIA to go and overthrow a government.
that's good. It's good.
Someone make that movie.
You know,
I'll write it. Start working on that too.
You know, there were rumors on the day that Kennedy was assassinated. Someone heard there were anti-Castro pigeons in a bar. They were going, coup.
Great. Anti-Castro pigeons in a bar. A long walk to fall off the end of that pier.
That's a Bill Hicks joke, all right?
Oh, is it? Jesus Christ. We need to do the Bay of Pigs, which is kind of a, you know, pretty well-publicized fuck-up.
Right. But yeah, like Manchurian Candidate 2004, it doesn't make the same point that like, and maybe it's the time, like maybe in 1962, there was more like Red Scare shit. We're coming off the end of McCarthyism.
I think that worked really well in the movie's favor too, is like, this is an actual issue like that's happening to people, or maybe, you know, I wasn't alive in the 60s, but I'm still pretty Red Scare-y. Cold War is like heating up, getting pretty hot, you know. We're not too far off. Well, Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right. We were pretty
But like the identifying communists in government is like was a real scare tactic being used.
Sure.
Conversely, like you could have people, I don't know, I guess they don't really want to engage with like the war on terror in 2004.
Well, it's weird you say that. Because in 2004, Meryl Streep even goes, we're in a cold war, but it's heating up. And I'm like, no, 2004, there's a very real war.
We're in Afghanistan and Iraq, guys. Like, yeah, so that was kind of weird. And they didn't, like, George Bush has that whole, like, you're either with us or you're against us thing. The Patriot Act is happening. There's lots of stuff they could draw from to, like, engage with. But they just don't. I don't know.
The Manchurian Candidate 2004 is a way to do a milquetoast political movie without offending anyone and making everyone feel good. Like, yeah, this is a good, yeah.
Also, you know, happening during a time where we're pretty like awash with some like with lots of political thrillers, and there's some decent ones coming out there. But there's like
sure,
there's a bunch of crazy where like the 10-year period between like 95 and like 2005 or something is just like Tom Clancy Renaissance, where like all of those
right, yeah, like, clear totally
Present Danger and the fucking the thing where they're gonna blow up the Super Bowl, and
there's like what two or three Mission Impossibles that came out in that time.
Yeah, and then there's like all the yeah various things where different people playing Jack Ryan are in stuff. I don't know. There's a shitload. Yeah, it's good. I mean, there's also better. I don't know. People should just. It's not really a political thriller, but like, just go watch Michael Clayton. It's a way better movie, and it fucking
rules. Sure. Yeah, or like The Bourne Identity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, more, that's more of like a straight spy thing. That's too like this. I don't know. This movie doesn't really like ever kind of pick a lane. It kind of like halfway commits to a bunch of stuff and then doesn't really.
Right. It seems like the Manchurian Candidate 62 is almost giving a window look at like here is McCarthyism run amok, or like here is McCarthyism. Or here is the fear of communism at home. Here is the worst case scenario, right? Whereas Manchurian Candidate 2004 is like, here's a movie that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but Denzel Washington and Meryl Streep are in it.
Yeah. I mean, the original one, too, is like, I don't know. It's more complex. I still haven't fully unwrapped the... So, Angela Lansbury is using the threat of communist infiltration to infiltrate the government with a communist backed
like yes.
political operative. It's pretty interesting. Yes.
So Alex, do you have any when it comes to Manchurian Candidate in 2022? Are you going to reboot or are you going to deboot?
No, deboot. Deboot. 100%.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
Yep. I think I agree. It's not something I'll be watching anytime soon again, but in like a decade or so, catch me on like a Friday afternoon with nothing else really going on. I might watch it again. You
I'm probably
going
to tell other people they should check it out. Yeah. It was fantastic.
It's worth seeing once.
At least, yeah. Like I said, I'll probably watch it again, but not... It's, you know, it's long. It was really good, but it's kind of a long movie.
Yeah.
Not a popcorn flick.
Do you have any final words for our audience or here today?
Oh, goddamn. I keep on forgetting to have one of these lined up. I do not. No. Go play. Relax with a game of solitaire.
And we will see you guys next week.
He stinks, and I don't like it.
Well, we better get going. I wonder, will we ever see each other again?
Who knows? God willing, we'll all meet again in Spaceballs 2. The search for more money.
Kawabunga.